I'm Haley Williams of the Buffalo Buttes, and you're listening to The Experience Hockey Talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Experience Hockey Talk. My name is Michael Limbaum, and we are brought to you by the Tilted Kilt Frederick, the Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery, located at 5605 Spectrum Drive in Frederick, Maryland. Comes at a Celtic-themed sports pub featuring the world-famous Tilted Kilt Girls. For more information on Tilted Kilt Frederick, visit them on Facebook today. And today is November 28th, and we are going to be taking a look at the week that was the NHL and, of course, the NWHL. And we're going to start with 11-21, the Colorado Avalanche at the Washington Capitals. The lineup for the Caps were Alex Ovechkin with Backstrom and Oshie, Marcus Johansson with Genny Kuznetsov and Justin Williams, Jason Chimera with Jay Beagle and Stanislav Galiv, Brooks Lake with Michael Latta and Tom Wilson. Defensive pairings were Nate Schmidt with John Carlson, Carl Alzner with Matt Niskanen, Dmitry Orlov with Taylor Chorney, and the starting goaltender was Braden Holtby. In the first period, it started off at 1:05 into the game when Colorado forward Cody McLeod was called for interference. Then at 3:05, Justin Williams scored his fifth of the season from Jason Chimera and Evgeny Kuznetsov. Third assist for Chimera, 13th assist for Kuznetsov on the season. Then at 7:15, Alexander Ovechkin scored his 10th of the season from Nicholas Backstrom, his 9th, and Taylor Chorney, his 2nd. Then at 10 minutes even into the period, John Carlson scored his 4th goal of the season from Evgeny Kuznetsov, which was his 14th, and Marcus Johansson, his 6th. Then Tom Wilson and Jerome McGinley were both called for roughing at 18:14, and Nate Schmidt, while on 4-on-4, scored his first of the season at 19:17, which was unassisted. At the end of the first, the Capitals were up 4-0. Shots were 11-10 Washington, faceoffs were 13-8 Washington, hits were 9-6 Washington, and for the power play, Colorado had none, to the Caps were 0-1. Then the analysis for the first period was a great first period for the Caps as they started quickly and made the offensive attacks count, scoring 4 unanswered goals and making the Avalanche struggle in their own zone. Definitely a very solid period for the Caps. Going into the second, Cody McLeod scored his 4th goal of the season, assisted by Blake Comeau and Carl Soderberg at 5:31. Then Jerome McGinley was called for holding at 6:08. Michael Latta and Chris Wagner were both called for 5 for fighting at 11:47, where Wagner also got an additional 2 minutes for roughing at 11:47 as well. Then Evgeny Kuznetsov was called for closing the hand on the puck at 16:38, and then at 18:01 on the power play, Nathan MacKinnon scored his 9th of the season from Gabriel Landeskog. Now, that means going into the second intermission, the Caps were up 4-2. Shots were 22-19 Washington, 26-16 were the faceoffs in favor of the Caps. Hits were 13-12 in favor of the Caps. Colorado was 1-for-1 on the power play, and the Caps were 0-for-3 on the power play. This was a better period for the Avalanche as the Caps took their foot off the gas, and as a result, Avs get 2 goals and cut the lead in half. Caps need to get their power play clicking going into the third. And then at 5:05 into the third period, Nathan MacKinnon was called for tripping, which on the power play at 6:34, Evgeny Kuznetsov scored his 7th goal of the season from Jason Chimera, his 4th assist of the season, and Matt Niskanen, his 8th assist of the season. Then at 10:07, Dmitry Orlov scored his 1st goal of the season, assisted by Jason Chimera, his 5th of the season, and Jay Beagle, his 4th of the season. Then at 11:52, Andreas Martinsson scored for the Colorado Avalanche, his 1st goal of the season, from Zach Redmond, his 1st assist, and Mikhail Grigorenko, his 7th assist. Then at 16:16, Carl Alsner scored his second goal of the season from TJ Oshie, his sixth assist of the season, and Alex Ovechkin, his ninth assist of the season. Then at 18:49, both Tom Wilson and Cody McLeod both called for 10 minutes for misconduct penalties. At the end of the game, Washington won 7-3, shots were 32-27 for Washington, faceoffs were 39-21 for Washington, hits were 21-19 for Colorado. Colorado was 1-for-1 on the power play, and Washington was 1-for-4. This was a much better third period for the Caps than the second. The Caps came out firing and got three more to take the Colorado Avalanche out of this game. Also, Carl Alsner, Nate Schmidt, John Carlson, and Dmitry Orlov scoring a goal each, it marked the first time the Caps had four defensemen score a goal in the same game since December 4th, 1992, against the New York Rangers, when Paul Cavallini, Al Iafrati, Sylvain Cote, and Kevin Hatcher scored at least one goal each that game. Then, moving on, the Capitals took on the Edmonton Oilers at home on November 23rd. The lineup for the Caps were Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, Johansson, Kuznetsov, Williams, Chimera, Beagle, Galiv, Lake, Latta, and Wilson. Defensive pairings were Schmidt, Carlson, Alsner, Niskanen, and Chorney, Orlov. Holtby was in net for this one as well. In the first period, all that happened was Tom Wilson was called for holding at 15:25. At the end of the first, it was nothing-nothing. Shots were 13-7 Edmonton. Faceoffs were 13-12 Edmonton. Hits were 12-3 Washington. Edmonton was 0-for-1 on the power play, and the Caps did not have one on record for the first. And now, since this was a very slow first period for the Caps, they didn't dictate the pace very well and were outshot as a result of it. These Edmonton Oilers are definitely not the same team that the Caps faced earlier this season. Then in the second period, it was a penalty-filled second period when at 1:53, Eric Greibel was called for hooking. Then at 6:45, Eric Greibel was called again, but for tripping. Then at 8:28, Nicholas Backstrom got a double minor for high sticking. At the end of the second, it was still tied, nothing-nothing. Shots were 23-15 Edmonton, faceoffs were 22-18 Washington. Hits were 16-10 Washington. On the power play, Edmonton was 0-for-3, and Washington was 0-for-2. And for the record, Backstrom was called for technically for two-minute minors for high-sticking, but technically speaking, it was a double minor, which still counts as two power plays. The analysis for this period was it was another rough period for the Capitals, as the Oilers made it tough on the Caps to get into the offensive zone and set up. The Caps need to pick up the tempo, as the Oilers are taking everything away from the Caps. And then in the third period, Nail Yakupov was called for holding the stick at 5:21, and then at 13:28, Dmitry Orlov scored his second goal of the season from Tom Wilson, his fifth assist of the season, and Brooks Like his second of the season. At the end of the game, it was Washington 1, Edmonton nothing. Edmonton outshot the Caps 33-30. Faceoffs were 31-21 in favor of Washington. Hits were 28-14 in favor of Washington, and both teams were 0-for-3 on the power play. Now, my analysis for this is that the Caps probably shouldn't have won this game. They were outplayed the entire game, and it was a very good shot by Dmitry Orlov that won the game, and it was spectacular goaltending by Braden Holtby that won this game as well. So, honestly, I don't think the Caps should have won the game, but they got the 2 points, and that's all that matters. And that, with that said, we're going to go to break, but before we do, I just want to say, as everyone remembers, the last episode of the Experience Hockey Talk was delayed due to me being out of town in Richmond, Virginia for VA Comic Con. Now, when I got to see the Colorado Avalanche game, I actually went to Guar Bar in downtown Richmond, which is a great establishment if you want to watch a Caps game. With that said, I did do some interviews at the convention for my convention-based podcast, The Experience. However, I did not get enough content to garner an episode just for VA Comic-Con. So what I'll be doing is during these breaks, three of the breaks will be the interviews that I conducted at VA Comic-Con. And we're going to start with that with this break, and then we're going to do it again a little bit later in the show. So with that, we're going to go to me at VA Comic Con for the experience, and then we'll be right back with the NWHL report. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the experience. This is Michael speaking, and we are brought to you by DerpyCon, which is December 4th through 6th at the Hyatt Morristown in Morristown, New Jersey. Come see stars like Karel Strukin, Richard Hatch, and Michael H. Hansen, among many others. And we are here live at VA Comic Con in Richmond, Virginia. And right now I am being joined by a musical Star Wars parody, Refrain of the Jedi, director and actor Brandon Hagstrom. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Now, what inspired you to do a Star Wars parody of Return of the Jedi?
Well, to be completely honest, I joined the CSZ Richmond Theater and the Richmond Comedy Sports Troupe back in 2002. And in 2003, they did their own rendition of A New Hope, where they parodied that particular movie. And a few years later, after I had joined, they did a version of The Empire Strikes Back called The Empire Rocks Back. It was a rock opera. And I've been pushing with the theater's artistic director to be able to do this one for about 8 years now. And so finally, with episode 7 coming out, you know, the timing was right, and we decided to do this one as well.
And timing is always a key thing, because without a new movie coming out or anything like that, maybe the buzz wouldn't be as big. But now it's like, hey, look, there's this new movie coming out, and if you really love Star Wars, come see this, you know, musical parody.
Absolutely, yeah. We've seen here in the past few weeks that Star Wars is already, The Force Awakens specifically, has already sold over 50 million tickets in advance for the box office, and that's a ridiculous number. So if we can just get a portion of that to come see our show, then we'll be quite happy.
And just throwing this out there, tickets are $15 online at CSZRVA.com and $18 at the door. Mm-hmm. And then you have shows coming up this upcoming weekend, November 27th, 28th, and 29th. So if you want something to do on Black Friday that's not shopping, you can go see a show.
Yeah.
Then you have December 3rd, 4th, and 5th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. So you're actually screening, like, literally the weekend the movie comes out.
Yep. Trying to fit it all in and lead right up to when people are going to be going to see The Force Awakens. And specifically with those shows, it is usually a late night show for a late night audience. But the shows on November 29th and December 20th are Sunday matinee shows at 2 p.m. that we've made purposefully appropriate for all audiences.
Very nice. Because it does say on your card, and I'm using the card to, you know, promote, it does contain adult language and humor and is intended for mature audiences. So what I mean, it, because it's a parody, you're able to, you know, stretch the envelope a bit more.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's really not as grotesque as we may make it sound on the card. There may be a few curse words thrown in here and there. I've only purposefully written one into the musical. Because it's very thematically appropriate. And then there's some sexual innuendo and a drug reference or two. So it's not that bad, but we do want to make sure that people know what they're coming to see and don't invite their elementary school children to come watch a show where they have to explain things later on.
Now let's talk about the casting and how you set it up. Like, when you did it, because you're part of a troupe, mm-hmm. like, was it just like, oh, well, I want to do this and that? Was it just... Was there actually, like, auditions for it within the troupe to get these parts?
Yeah.
Because I know this trash can had to try really hard to get this part as R2-D2.
Oh, yeah. Say hello, R2-D2. Yes, that is my counterpart in the musical, R2-D2. He is a trash can. But for casting, other than R2-D2, we did hold open auditions for really anybody in the city that wanted to come try out. I would say that a good number of the cast is made up of people who belong to the Comedy Sports Richmond troupe, but everybody in the cast, all 18 individuals, are improvisational comedians in the Richmond, Virginia area.
Very nice. And how long did it take you to write the script for this play?
Well, because we are all improvisational comedians, really, it kind of writes itself. We all have the outline of the movie that we have to stick to. And, of course, all 17 songs that are featured in the performance are pre-written and changed up like Weird Al Yankovic would change up popular songs. But, again, you know, it's improv mixed in with the outline of the movie. Each night is different.
Very nice. And you say each night is different. What type of differences in the shows that you've done so far? Because you've already done three. Yeah, three. 19, 20, 21st. Mm-hmm. Yep. How has each show differed so far from the first three shows that you've done?
Just the nightly jokes. I mean, you know, some things will stay consistent, but oftentimes, you know, because it's improv, the show will change and morph as we go through it. There'll be different callbacks that we can make that really help us to connect with the audience, things that just that audience for just that night would enjoy. So if you were to come back and see the show on a different night, you would see a slightly different show with definitely some different jokes in it.
All right. Well, Brandon, I hope you enjoy the rest of your VA Comic Con here in Richmond, which, of course, you live in Richmond. I don't, so I'm the one who's traveling to you. But thank you so much for coming on. And anybody who wants to go to the show and are in the Richmond area, shows are November 27th, 28th, and 29th, December 3rd, 4th, and 5th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. And it's at 8906 West Broad Street in Gold's Gym Plaza. And they're $15 online at CSZRVA.com or $18 at the door for the tickets. So, Brandon, thanks again.
Thank you.
And, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for the Serious Hockey fans. And it is now time for the NWHL Report, which is brought to you by DerbyCon. DerbyCon, which is December 4th through 6th at the Hyatt Morristown in Morristown, New Jersey. Come see special guests like Carl Struken, Richard Hatch, Mike, and many others. For more information, please visit DerbyCon.com. And this past weekend in the NWHL, you had the New York Riveters at the Boston Pride in front of more than 1,500 fans at Harvard's Bright Landry Center. The Riveters won their second straight 3-2 win against the Pride. New York opened up the scoring with two unanswered goals in the first 2:13. With Wisconsin Badgers, Brooke Ehrman and Madison Packer lighting the lamp. Hillary Knight cut the score to 2-1 on the power play goal at 9:54 into the first period. But Megan Fardelman responded just 27 seconds later, giving New York a 3-1 edge. Manda Pelkey scored the only other goal for the Pride. Riveters goaltender Nana Fujimoto was spectacular again, stopping 41 of 43 shots for the win. And then the Connecticut Whale visited the Buffalo Buttes, where the Whale scored four goals in the first 14 minutes and had a 6-1 lead early in the second period thanks to goals by Kelly Stack, Sam Faber, Kaylee Fratkin, Jessica Kuzumi, Cheyenne Darkangelo, and Kelly Babstock. However, that didn't last long. The Buttes tied the game with five unanswered goals in the second period, including a pair from both Courtney Kunichika and Kelly Steedman. Megan Duggan and Haley Williams also scored for Buffalo. Kelly Babstock would score the deciding goal in the shootout for Connecticut, who now stand atop the NWHL at 5-0-0. Also in this game, Megan Bozak of the Buffalo Buttes became the first NWHL player to be ejected from a game after taking a high-sticking major in the first period. And then the NWHL named their Player of the Week. The NWHL announced that Buffalo Buttes forward Kelly Steedman has been named Player of the Week. Steedman, who leads all NWHL goal scorers with six tallies, netted a pair as Buffalo rallied from a five-goal deficit to pick up their first point in franchise history. Steedman scored her first goal shorthanded and her second of the game on the power play. And of course, now joining me is the NWHL Player of the Week, Buffalo Buttes forward Kelly Steedman. Kelly, how are you doing
this weekend? Good. How are you?
How was your Thanksgiving?
Pretty good. Got to spend some time with some friends, and I didn't get to go home because we have games here at Robert Morris with our team, but it was good and nice day off. So
yeah, I enjoyed my my full day of playing Fallout 4.
Huh, that sounds exciting.
Just sleeping in and then playing Fallout.
Nice.
But as I brought up, you were the NWHL leading goal scorer. What does that mean to you, especially when you look at how, like, the Boston Pride have started their season and how the Connecticut Whale started their season, where they've scored a lot of goals so far, and then you're kind of, like, on this team that's not who's 0-4-1 right now, which is a little deceiving. Because it's still very early and everyone's still trying to match. What's it like to you knowing that you're the leading goal scorer compared to against players like Hillary Knight and others?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a pretty cool feeling to be able to score that many goals in the short period of time that I've been playing. But, you know, obviously the most important thing for us is that we get a win. So for me, I'm just enjoying playing the game right now and just enjoying being with my teammates. So it's obviously a really cool feeling, and it's kind of an honor you know, to be named player of the week and all that good stuff. But we're really looking to get a win here, and hopefully we can do that this weekend.
And speaking of that, you're actually playing the New York Riveters, I believe, for the very first time this season.
Yep.
What's it going to be like going on a road trip for the first time? Because if I remember right, I think your first game was on the road, but every other game after that has been at home.
Yeah, we've been at home every game. So yeah, it's going to be a little different, obviously, not playing in our rink in the Harbor Center, and trying to get used to a different building and different fans and all that stuff. So, you know, it'll be a good test for us, I think. But I think we're all pretty excited to do it and to get over there and get going. So.
Now, as I mentioned earlier in the report, you got ladies were down 6-1 in the second period. What do you think was the starting point that really started that comeback for the team in that game?
I think we just kind of looked at each other on the bench and we were like, hey, you know, like this isn't the kind of hockey that we want to play. And going into the locker room after the first period, you know, we kind of just talked as a team and figured out that we just needed to get some shots on net and just get a goal one at a time. And that's kind of what we did. You know, if we had tried to solve all the problems right away, you know, I don't think we would have been successful. But I think it was just coming together as a team in the locker room and, you know, deciding that we had a chance to do it. So it was pretty cool.
Now, I actually got to watch the games, not this past weekend, but the weekend before, when you lost 3-2 off of a fluky goal.
Mm-hmm.
I had done a tweet going into the third period saying what each team needs to do to win the game. And at the time, you ladies were down, I believe, 2-0 at the time going into the third. And mm-hmm. I said that you need to cause chaos in front of their net and just shoot everything at them. I don't know if that tweet got to you, but that's what you did.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And you tied the game off of that, off exactly what I said that needed to happen for you ladies. And it just happened that a fluky goal happened and you lost the game. But yeah. I noticed that when you play specifically for the Buttes, because I finally have seen all four teams play, when the Buttes play that kind of chaos around the other team's net, I've noticed that you've had a lot more success.
Yeah, definitely. We have a lot of players that can, you know, be big and be physical in front of the net and get those, you know, kind of dirty garbage rebound goals, which are huge. And a lot of times when you're playing against, you know, other pretty talented teams, those are the kind of goals that are going to make a difference. So we're lucky that we have those players that don't mind taking a beating in front of the net to score. So hopefully we can continue to do that.
Now, I'm going to go over the NWHL standings for a moment with you.
Okay.
Because, again, like I mentioned earlier, your team is 0-4-1, you're last place. Connecticut's 5-0-0 first. Boston's second at 3-2-0, which everyone thought that after the break that they would continue their tear, which New York has halted by winning 2 straight, going 2-3-0. Now, still very early, everyone's only played 5 games. Do you think that coming into New York, going on the road for your team, do you think that could be the lead of that turning point for your team? I mean, for wins, because sometimes when you're playing at home, you're like, yeah, we're at home. But then when you're on the road, there's a different feel. There's a different vibe when you're playing a road game. Do you think this little road trip could start turning things around for the team?
Yeah, I think so. You know, obviously we have a great setup in Buffalo. We have awesome fans and, you know, we're pretty spoiled, at the Harbor Center there. So I think, yeah, sometimes you can come in and just kind of be complacent and be happy, like to be there and to be playing in front of your fans. And, I think when you do go to an away game, there's always an extra chip on your shoulder kind of, and you kind of know that you have something to prove, in front of other teams' fans and that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely hoping that this weekend is, you know, the kind of game that we can turn around and get a win and, you know, get our comeback going.
Now, one thing that's come out recently is the Nesson deal with the Boston Pride, which also, for those noting, this game on Sunday at 3 p.m. against the Connecticut Whale for Boston will also be aired on ESPN3. So everyone who can look at local listings for ESPN3, they can catch the game at home I might be able to catch it down here in Maryland that way. What do you think that means for not just the Buttes, for when you play the Pride and the game bees on Nessun, but what does it mean overall for the league, in your opinion, by the Pride getting the Nessun deal?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge, obviously. You know, I think in the last couple years, with the Olympics and everything, we kind of showed that women's hockey is getting, when it gets more airtime, people watch it. I think that the women's hockey at the Olympics was the number two watched event of the entire Winter Olympics. So that's huge. And I think the more that we can, you know, get our games televised and get fans to the games and get people to see what we do, I think that's only going to help grow the game and get more people into it and hopefully get more, you know, girls involved in the sport. So it's awesome. And I'm pretty excited that they're able to do that for the Boston Pride. And hopefully here at some point we'll get all our games televised.
And then, of course, the other big announcement, which also the tickets went on sale yesterday. The All-Star Game is being held in Buffalo at the Harbor Center. What's it like knowing that your teammate Emily Falzer will be the captain of one of the teams? And what's your pitch to her to make you pick you to be on her All-Star team?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm pretty happy that that Emily gets to do that. You know, she obviously deserves it. She's a great player, great person. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, I don't think any of us have started bribing her too much yet. We're still, maybe if we win a game or two, then we'll start thinking about that. But yeah, I'll have to think of something good to try to give her so that she'll pick me.
All you have to do is NWHL Player of the Week, leading goal scorer in the league. It just says it right there.
Yeah.
But Kelly, it was great having you on.
Thank you.
I wish you more continued success with the Buttes.
Thanks.
And the NWHL. And Leading Up Now is on tap, as I've already mentioned in the interview. 3 p.m. this Sunday, the Connecticut Whale are visiting the Boston Pride, which will be on Nessun and on ESPN3. And, of course, the Buffalo Buttes will be at the New York Riveters in New York. Those games you can also catch on the NWHL website. For more information on the NWHL and the NWHL All-Star Game, visit nwhl.co today.
Tilted Kilt Girl Brittany here. Need a place to watch the game? Come to the Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery at 5605 Spectrum Drive in Frederick, Maryland. Tilted Kilt Frederick, home of the world-famous Tilted Kilt Girls, come to the best-looking sports pub you've ever seen for all your Washington Capitals games viewing pleasure. For more information on the Tilted Kilt Frederick, visit them on Facebook today.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for the Serious Hockey Fans, brought to you by the Tilted Kilt in Frederick, Maryland. And we're going to get right back into the Capitals games breakdowns, going to 11:25 versus the Winnipeg Jets. The lineup for the Capitals was Alex Ovechkin with Nicholas Backstrom and TJ Oshie, Marcus Johansson with Evgeny Kuznetsov and Justin Williams, Jason Chimera with Jay Beagle and Andre Burakovsky, Nate Schmidt with Brooks Like with Michael Ladd and Tom Wilson. Then with the defensive pairings, you had Nate Schmidt with John Carlson, Carl Alsner with Matt Niskanen, Taylor Chorney with Dmitry Orlov, and Braden Holtby in the net. In the first period at 1:12 into the game, Justin Williams scored his 6th goal of the season, assisted by John Carlson, his 10th assist, and Evgeny Kuznetsov, his 15th assist. Then at 6:38, Winnipeg goal was scored by Tyler Myers, his 2nd of the season, assisted by Andrew Ladd and Brian Little, both their 10th assist of the season each. Then at 10:31, Andrew Ladd was called for hooking. Then at 13:01, Andrew Ladd scored his 5th of the season from Blake Wheeler and Toby Enstrom. Wheeler was his 15th assist and Enstrom his 7th assist. Then Dustin Byfuglien was called for interference at 17:47, which Washington converted on the power play at 18:46 when Alex Ovechkin scored his 11th of the season from John Carlson, his 11th assist of the season, and Nicholas Backstrom, his 10th assist of the season. Going into the first intermission, the Caps and the Winnipeg Jets were tied at 2 apiece. Washington outshot Winnipeg 15-6. Faceoffs were 11-8 in favor of Winnipeg. Hits were even at 10 apiece. Winnipeg had no power plays, where Washington was 1-4-2. This was an okay period for the Capitals. They started off on the right foot by scoring in the opening minutes. However, due to mistakes in their own zone, it costed them two goals. But the Caps responded very well by dominating the play and scoring on the power play. If the Caps can clean up their play in their own zone, 8 giveaways in the first, and continue to dominate in the offensive zone, 15 shots, 7 of which were by Ovechkin himself, the Caps will win this game. Then going into the second period at 6:24, Tom Wilson and Anthony Peluso were both called for unsportsmanlike conduct. Then at 7:17, Alex Ovechkin was called for hooking. At 10:03, Nicholas Backstrom scored his 8th goal of the season, assisted by Nate Schmidt, his 2nd of the season, and Dmitry Orlov, his 6th assist of the season. Then Jason Chimera was called for tripping at 12:51, followed by a power play goal by Matthew Perreault, his 2nd of the season, assisted by Dustin Byfuglien, his 6th of the season, and Brian Little, his 11th of the season. And that was at 13:53. Then Dmitry Orlov scored his 3rd goal of the season from Evgeny Kuznetsov, his 16th, and Marcus Johansson, his 7th, at 16:22. Washington outshot Winnipeg 26-19. Whereas faceoffs, Winnipeg at 23 to the Caps 15, Washington at 20 hits to Winnipeg's 15. Both teams were 1-for-2 on the power play. This was another okay period for the Capitals. They are cleaning up their play in their own zone, and they are creating great chances in the offensive zone. Caps need to stay out of the penalty box and continue to play their game. They are going into the third period with the lead. If they can add 1 or 2 more goals to the start of the start the period, that would be good for the team's momentum. And going into the third, at 13:44, Evgeny Kuznetsov scored his 8th goal of the season, assisted by Marcus Johansson with his 8th assist of the season. Washington would win the game 5-3, outshooting Winnipeg 34-26. Winnipeg won 30 the faceoffs to the Caps 22. Hits were 25-24 in favor of Washington, and both teams were 1-for-2 on the power play. Overall, a good game for the Caps. They picked up an important win to continue their best start to a season in 24 years. They cleaned everything up in their zone, and they bogged down the Winnipeg Jets' attack. And then you had last night's game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, which I actually got the opportunity to actually be there, because I had not been to a game yet this season, and being able to watch a game live compared to on television was really great for the experience. The lineup for the Caps was Ovechkin, Backstrom, Oshie, Johansson, Kuznetsov, Williams, Chimera, Beagle, Burakovsky, Like, Latta, Wilson, Schmidt with Carlson, Alston with Niskanen, Chorney with Orlov, and Braden Holtby as the starting goaltender. In the first period, Tampa Bay took a penalty when Victor Hedman was called for high sticking at 5:17, which Alex Ovechkin responded on the power play at 7:09 with his 12th of the season from Jason Chimera, his 6th assist, and Evgeny Kuznetsov, his 17th. Then, at 14:43, both Michael Latta and Ryan Callahan were called for roughing. Then at 17:30, Ryan Callahan was called for tripping. At the end of the first, as a result of being at the game, I don't have the full stats of hits and faceoffs, so I only have shots and power plays for the first and second period. Washington, obviously up 1-0 after the first. Washington outshot the Tampa Bay Lightning 18-9. Were 1-for-2 on the power play, and Tampa Bay had none. This was a very strong first period for the Capitals as they contained Tampa Bay's offense and took full advantage of being on the power play, as both were used as shooting galleries. Then, going into the second period, Braden Coburn was called for delay of game at 16:05, which then Jason Chimera contributed on the power play at 18:03 with his 6th goal of the season, assisted by Evgeny Kuznetsov, his 18th, and Matt Niskanen, his 9th. Then, at 19:18, Marcus Johansson scored his 4th goal of the season from John Carlson, his 12th assist, and Nate Schmidt, his 3rd assist. And both the Chimera and Johansson goals were dirty tipping goals in front of the net in the crease area, which is a key area where you always want to go to when you're scoring goals. At the end of the second, Washington was up 3-0 on Tampa Bay. They outshot Tampa Bay in the second period 13-5, which brought their totals up to 31-14, respectively. Tampa Bay still did not have a power play, and Washington was 2-for-3. After another dominant period for the Washington Capitals, as they held the Lightning to only 5 shots in the second, and once again made their power play count once again. When the Caps play the way they have these past 2 periods, they can be unbeatable. Then going into the third period, Andre Schuster was called for hooking 4 minutes into the third, which then at 5:16 on the power play, TJ Oshie scored his 6th goal of the season, assisted by Nicholas Backstrom with his 11th, and John Carlson, his 13th assist of the season. Then at 10:49, Brian Boyle scored his fifth of the season from Ryan Callahan, his fourth, and JT Brown his sixth. Then at 12:45, Victor Hedman scored his second goal of the season from Vladislav Namestnikov for his fifth assist of the season. Then Washington was called for two back-to-back penalties, one for Alex Ovechkin for slashing at 15:16, and then Marcus Johansson for delay of game at 19:48. Washington won the game 4-2. They outshot Tampa Bay 37-34. However, Tampa outshot the Capitals 20-6 in the third period. Faceoffs were 44-33 Washington, and then hits were 30-16 Washington. Power plays, the Tampa Bay Lightning were 0-2, and the Caps were 3-4. The third period was not a very good period for the Caps. While in the first 5 minutes of the period they continued their momentum, it seems that after TJ Oshie scored the fourth goal of the game, they took their foot off the gas, and as a result, Tampa was able to get back into the game. Key things that were great for the Caps in this game is that they were able to get their power play kick clicking by going 3-for-4, and they played 45 really great minutes of hockey, but they need to play 60 great minutes of hockey. If they had played a full 60 minutes, this probably could have been a 6-0 game rather than a 4-2 game. So with that, we look ahead to what's on tap for the Caps. Today, November 28th, the Capitals will be taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are currently 7-10-5 and 8th in the Atlantic Division. And then on 12-3, they take on the Montreal Canadiens in Montreal, who are currently 18-4-2, and they are first place in the NHL and obviously first in the Atlantic in the East. So with that, we are going to go to break. We're going to do our second interview from VA Comic-Con. And with that, we'll be back from the break. And everyone, welcome back to the experience. It's Mike here at VA Comic-Con, and I am with Adam Conkle, who is a mixed media artist, and he is selling his custom bead art, which right behind us is one of the Washington Capitals that I've been eyeing all weekend. Adam, how's your weekend been here at VA Comic-Con?
Oh, the weekend's been going great.
So, how's business been going for you with all this?
It's going pretty good. It's a little hit and miss. You got to draw the people in and talk to them, though.
Yep. And now you do custom bead work. We're looking at the Washington Capitals right now. You also have Baltimore Orioles, San Francisco 49ers logos. What is it like making these things, and what's the process, you know, to create these?
It's kind of tedious and boring when you really think about it. But, you know, you sit down. I put the beads down one at a time with a pair of tweezers on pegboards. And you put parchment paper and you iron it, and you pull it off the pegboard, and that's pretty much it. I custom frame the bigger things, and I can custom make anything. For the patterns, some of the patterns are mine, some of them aren't, but I got a program that I can make a pattern out of any image. So,
and what's the normal process like for making these?
The normal process, I mean, I got buckets full of different color beads, and I sit down, and I got my computer renderings or a JPEG image or a pixelated image that I can just pull it off of.
But like how long would it take? How long do you plan it out, process, especially something for like this Captain America right here where it's the background's on fire and stuff like that?
So the bigger projects where I'm designing it, I might take a week or so just to play around with the design. And then I sit down and I'll beat it, and it'll take me a couple hours for the bigger things. The smaller stuff, just like the little kind of Christmas tree ornament size, take me maybe 5-10 minutes to make one or two of them.
Very nice. And I noticed that you have a lot of old school buttons. Were you just collecting them as a kid or something? And then
lapel pins. Most of them are the metal cloisonne push pins. I actually started collecting the Marvel pins. I have a pretty substantial collection of Marvel pins myself. But I just, bulk lots. Maybe I'll see something that has one pin I want, but it's, you have to buy 5 or 10. And it just started adding up, and I just started stockpiling, if you will, or hoarding. And I figured it was time to sell, so I sell lapel pins as well.
Very nice. Well, Adam, where can they people catch your work at and potentially do online purchasing for you?
You could look me up on Facebook. Just look up Custom Bead Art or look up Adam Conkle and you can find me. I don't have an official website. I'm Active Army, so I just kind of do this as a side hobby.
Very nice. Well, Adam, enjoy the rest of your weekend here at VA Comic-Con, and thanks for doing the interview, man.
Thank you.
And with that, we'll be going to break.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for Serious Hockey fans, brought to you by the Tilt a Kilt Frederick. And it is now time for NHL news and notes.
And starting with 11-21, Patrick Marleau collected a pair of assists to eclipse 1,000 career points and helped the Sharks improve the 5-0 on their season-high six-game road trip. Marleau, who has spent his entire career with the San Jose Sharks, is the first player to earn 1,000 career points with the San Jose Sharks and 83rd in NHL history. Also on 11-21, Henrik and Daniel Sedin combined for 4 goals and 9 points, highlighted by Daniel's 900th career point to power the Vancouver Canucks past the Vancouver Canucks in the return to Rogers Arena after a 7-game road trip. And then also on 11-21, the Florida Panthers tied the game with 2 goals in a span of 39 seconds, and Henrik Lundqvist denied a penalty shot, all in the final 2:28 of regulation to force overtime, where Rick Nash completed a hat-trick to help the New York Rangers continue their record-setting start to the season. Then, on 11-22, the Colorado Avalanche activated goalie Semyon Varlamov from injured reserve. Varlamov missed 6 games due to a groin injury. Goalie Calvin Pekarek was reassigned to San Antonio of the American Hockey League. Then, on 11-23, the Winnipeg Jets placed goalie Andre Pavlik on injured reserve with what Coach Paul Maurice called a significant knee sprain that will keep him out through at least December. Goalie Connor Hellebuyck was recalled from Manitoba of the American Hockey League. On 11-22, backdating one day, Boston Bruins general manager Don Sweeney announced that the team has claimed forward Landon Ferraro off of waivers from the Detroit Red Wings. Sweeney also announced that defenseman Kevin Miller has been placed on injury reserve. Going back to 11-23, Montreal Canadiens right winger Brendan Gallagher had surgery on 2 fractured fingers on his left hand and will be out indefinitely. Gallagher was injured blocking a slap shot from Islanders defenseman Johnny Boychuk at 12:34 of the second period of the Canadiens' 4-2 win on 11-22. And there will be a little bit more on that status coming up. Then on 11-23, the NHL Stars of the Week for week ending November 22nd were announced. First star was Martin Jones, goalie of the San Jose Sharks. Jones went 3-0-0 with a 1.63 goals against average, with a .951 save percentage and 1 shutout during a week in which the Sharks picked up 4 victories to complete their season-high 6-game road trip with a perfect 6-0 record. Then the second star of the week was left winger of the Vancouver Canucks, Daniel Sedin. Sedin led the NHL with 5 goals and ranked 2nd with 7 points as the Canucks went 1-2-1 in 4 outings. He scored in each of the team's first 2 games, then Sedin registered 3 goals, 1 assist, and for 4 points, including his 900th point, 6th career hat-trick, and the game-winning goal in a 6-3 victory over the Chicago Blackhawks on November 21st. And the third star was Kevin Shattenkirk, defenseman of the St. Louis Blues. Shattenkirk paced all defensemen and shared 3rd in the league with 2 goals, 4 assists for 6 points in 4 games as the Blues earned 5 out of a possible 8 standing points. Then on 11-23, the Detroit Red Wings unveiled the jersey they will wear in the Coors Light NHL Stadium Series against the Colorado Avalanche on February 27th. The coloration of the uniform was primarily red, with simplified white accents creating a bold, striking stadium scale visuals while staying true to the color identity to the franchise. The crest features a redesigned D logo updated in its design style to connect more with the iconic modern-day winged wheel logo. The single white diagonal stripe across the chest celebrates the iconic stripe of the standard storied original six franchise. The diagonal placement is inspired by modern automotive aesthetics and is a tribute to the automotive industry that has been a foundation to the city of Detroit. On 11-24, the Chicago Blackhawks and Minnesota Wild each unveiled their jersey for the 2016 Coors Light NHL Stadium Series game. On February 21st, the Blackhawks jersey is white and features their traditional logo on the crest. It has 4 red stars on the collar, representative of the city of Chicago's flag. The shoulders and sleeves have black stripes with the Chicago Blackhawks alternate logo. The Wild's jersey is green and has their primary logo on the chest. The sleeves have beige and red stripes. On 11-24, Montreal Canadiens right winger Brendan Gallagher will miss a minimum of 6 weeks after having surgery on the 2 fractured fingers on his left hand that was reported a little earlier. On 11-24, Carolina Hurricanes forward Nathan Gerby was placed on injury reserve retroactive to November 22nd. Gerby suffered a lower body injury in the first period of Carolina's 4-3 win against the Los Angeles Kings on 11-22. He is expected to miss 4-6 weeks. The Anaheim Ducks on 11-24 have recalled goalie John Gibson and center Chris Mueller from the San Diego Gulls, Anaheim's primary development affiliate in the AHL. The Ducks have also reassigned center Mike Cerbosa and defenseman Shane O'Brien to San Diego. On 11/24, the San Jose Sharks general manager Doug Wilson announced that the club has signed forward Danis Zubrus to a one-year two-way contract. On 11/24, the National Hockey League announced that Chief Operating Officer John Collins will be departing the league to pursue a new business opportunity. Collins, who joined the NHL in November 2006 and had been COO since August of 2008. On 11/24, the Montreal Canadiens and Boston Bruins announced their rosters for the 2016 Alumni Game, which will be played on December 31st at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. More than 40 former players and coaches are scheduled to participate in the renewal of the legendary rivalry in this unique outdoor setting. On 11/25, Montreal Canadiens announced that goalie Carey Price was placed on injury reserve and will be out of the lineup for at least 1 week. Price left the game on 11/24 against the New York Rangers after 2 periods with the same lower body injury that kept him out of the lineup for 9 games from October 30th through November 19th. Now, with an update, I did read a report that after seeing team doctors, Carey Price is to be out about a month now. So Carey Price looking to be out a month instead of just at least a week. But I'll have more on that on next week's episode. Then, on 11/26, Edmonton Oilers forward Neil Yakupov will be out of the lineup 2 to 4 weeks with a sprained ankle he sustained Wednesday when he was taken down by an official during a 4-1 loss at the Carolina Hurricanes. During a faceoff early in the second period, Yakupov got his legs tangled with linesman Matt McPherson, and each went down to the ice. On 11/27, New York Rangers center Derek Stefan sustained broken ribs during the second period of a 4-3 loss to the Boston Bruins at TD Garden yesterday and will be out indefinitely, per coach Alain Vigneault. Stefan was injured 8:06 into the second period when he made a pass up the right side of the Rangers zone and was hit on the forecheck by Bruins forward Matt Beleski. Stefan hit the wall awkwardly and had to be attended to by a trainer. Stefan skated off and didn't miss a shift the rest of the second period, but he did not play in the third period. On 11/27, Chicago Blackhawks forward Patrick Kane tied the record for most consecutive games with a point by an American-born player at 18 games when he got an assist on Duncan Keith's goal in the third period against the Anaheim Ducks at Honda Center last night. Kane tied the record held by Eddie Olchuk, who did it when he was with the Toronto Maple Leafs in 1989-90 season, and Phil Kessel when he was then with the Boston Bruins in the 2008-2009 season. Then on 11/27, down 2-0 with less than 2 minutes remaining in regulation, Marian Hossa and Duncan Keith scored 74 seconds apart to force overtime, where Artem Anisimov completed the comeback for the Chicago Blackhawks against the Anaheim Ducks. And on 11/27, the Boston Bruins scored twice in the final 4 minutes of the regulation, including the game-winning goal by David Krejci with 1:43 left to overcome a pair of one-goal deficits and defeat the New York Rangers in the 2015 Discover Thanksgiving Showdown. And we are going to go back to one more break, because when we come back, we are going to be doing the quarterly breakdowns of the NHL, as we've already hit the quarter mark, and we're going to take a look, analyze a couple teams, and see who could probably be the turnarounds for this rest of the season. And with that, we're going to do our final interview from VA Comic Con, and after that, we'll be right back. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the experience at VA Comic Con. And joining me now is cosplayer from Viva La Cosplay, Viva Valentina. I get my one botch.
Viva Valentina.
How have you been today?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm tired, but I'm doing well.
Now, you were actually brought in as a cosplay guest because of Viva La Cosplay. No? I was told you were. No?
I love the Viva La Cosplay people. It's just a coincidence that our names are Viva Valentina and Viva La Cosplay. They're great people. They're all Richmond's local? Richmond's, and I'm located in Virginia Beach.
Ah. Now, what's it like being at VA Comic Con right now for you? Because you've been set up here and getting a lot of foot traffic coming to your table.
It's kind of like a dream come true. Virginia Comic Con was my first Comic Con back in 2011, and that's when I started going to cons, and that's when I started cosplaying. And I didn't even know this world existed until a friend of mine invited me to the con, and I saw other people dressed up, and I had such a good time that now I go to a pretty much every month I'm at a con. So to come back, to be invited back as a guest, and to come to this, to see them come become a two-day show, I feel like it's my cosplay journey has really come full circle.
And it's funny that you bring up like 2011 you started. 2010 was my first convention, which was Otakon. And of course then I didn't go until like 2012. And then like that was when I started going to more cons consistently. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, as you're saying, like you're now like a cosplay guest. You know, it's funny how you see it because like, yeah, I went to Otakon a couple times and then as time goes on, next thing you know, it's like, hey, I'm doing panels now. Hey, I'm hosting celebrity panels. It's like it's that evolution of how we go from attendees to what we do now. It's really cool.
I love feeling like I'm a part of bringing Comic-Con and bringing nerd culture to Virginia, to my hometown, to Richmond, and just to be involved. I'm totally psyched.
Yeah, and. What cosplays have you been like what was your first, actually? Let's just start with that one.
So the first cosplay was actually a closet cosplay. So it was an assembled costume, not really something that I made. And it was a Zatanna costume. And that was the first costume I wore to VA Comic Con. And it started off as a Halloween costume. And now I make all of my costumes. I've really grown as a seamstress. I'm learning prop making. It still baffles me how people can make some amazing things out of foam and cardboard and basically nothing. And I'm trying to learn more too.
And for those wondering, we have, I believe that's the cosplay contest going on over there.
Yep, that's all the noise.
that's the rave party music going on in the background. So, what have you ever entered any cosplay contests at all?
When I first started cosplaying, I did a couple small costume contests. Right now, I'm wearing my Red Lantern Blease costume. And Annapolis Comic Con 2013 or 2012, I got second place in the Annapolis Comic Con costume contest, and that was the last time I competed.
So it was like just the one time.
Just
the one time. I don't want. I won. I'm good.
Well, I don't like the competition side of cosplay. I do it for fun and I love it.
And like we have like Ivy Doom Kitty and Sony Erlin over there.
Great.
Like having them here. Do you ever like try to like pick their brains on stuff for cosplay, like on how to improve? Because, like, honestly, like just anything, like panel hosting or whatever, like I always try to pick people's brains. To, like, what could I do better to improve, like maybe this skill or that skill? So,
I mean, mostly we just hang out. it's really helpful knowing them because they get. Trying to think of the best way to say this without sounding mean. They know more about the community. They know about more people in the community. They know the kinds of people to avoid and the kinds of people that are good to know. And that kind of wisdom that they've accumulated over the years, that's really the most helpful.
So how to work within the community.
Exactly. Working with different people and keeping your head on straight. And it's kind of overwhelming when everyone wants to talk to you and everyone wants to take your picture, and it's like to not go full crazy. It's really inspiring to see them.
It's like an overwhelming experience. It's like
you
don't know how to, and then you have like people that the guide and mentor.
exactly, and it's like seeing people that that it's their first Comic-Con and that they're starting out building their own costumes. Seeing them come back again and again, and seeing how they grow. It's amazing. I love seeing that. I love seeing my friends grow in their craft and continue to make amazing things. Like some of the Viva La Cosplayers,
The people from Viva La Cosplay.
The people from Viva La Cosplay. I've seen, I've known them for a little over a year now, I think, a year or more. And like I've seen them, their cosplay journey. I see them build their costumes, and it's like everything they come out with new is bigger and better. And I love that.
And you know what? We're going to wrap up now. I know you've been very nervous this entire time. You're just like, oh my god, I hope I don't mess up. I don't want to mess up.
I don't know how to speak, and I don't know what to do with my hands. So.
Well, you're not being videotaped. So you could just take your hands and just go, like, wave them around, yes. But, Viva, thank
Ignore
you so
much. Ignore my awkwardness.
Thank you so much for coming
on. Thank you for having me.
And enjoy the rest of your con.
You too.
And with that, we'll be going to break.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for Serious Hockey fans. Thanks for allowing the breaks to be the VA Comic-Con interviews I originally did for my convention-based podcast, The Experience. Like I said, I couldn't get enough content to do its own episode by itself, so I decided that why not use it for breaks for this show instead. It's a fresh break from listening to all the same plugs that I normally have on the show, which will be coming back next week. Now, we are back. We're talking the NHL quarterly breakdown. We're at the quarter mark, and we're going to start with the Atlantic Division. The Atlantic Division, you have the Montreal Canadiens first in the division after playing 24 games, or 18-4-2 with 38 points, and they are at first place in the National Hockey League. Then at second place, they have the Ottawa Senators with 22 games played at 12-5-5 with 29 points. Then the Boston Bruins at 22 games played at 13-8-1 at 27 points. Fourth is Detroit Red Wings at 23 games played with 12-8-3 record at 27 points. Then at fifth is the Tampa Bay Lightning with 24 games played, 11-10-3 with 25 points. Sixth is the Florida Panthers with 22 games played, 9-9-4 record with 22 points. And seventh is the Buffalo Sabres with a 23 games played with a 9-12-2 record with 20 points. And eighth and final place of the Atlantic Division is the Toronto Maple Leafs with 22 games played with 7 wins, 10 losses, and 5 overtime losses for 19 points. Now, of course, one of the bigger surprises is right now the Tampa Bay Lightning being where they are. Now, yes, all they need is Detroit and Boston to lose 2 games, and then they can just win 2 games and they're back into it. But at the same time, Boston has 2 games in hand on Tampa. Detroit has a game in hand on Tampa Bay as well. So it's interesting. Last season, Tampa was the second highest scoring offense. I had them as first in the division. Obviously, Montreal's first in the division, and rightfully so, especially the fact that Montreal has been doing a lot of it without their number one goaltender, Carey Price, in net. So it is a real testament to what Montreal is doing, and they're reaping the reward for what they have to go through without their number one goaltender. Then, going into the Metropolitan Division, you have the New York Rangers in first place with 23 games played at 16-5-2 with 34 points. Then second place is the Washington Capitals with 22 games played with a 16-5-1 record with 33 points. Then at third place is the Pittsburgh Penguins with 22 games played with 13-8-1 record with 27 points. The New York Islanders are fourth with 23 games played with an 11-8-4 record with 26 points. Then at fifth is the New Jersey Devils with 22 games played with an 11-9-2 record with 24 points. Sixth is the Flyers, Philadelphia Flyers, at 23 games played with 8-10-5 record and 21 points. Seventh is the Carolina Hurricanes with 23 games played with an 8-11-4 record and 20 points. And eighth is the Columbus Blue Jackets with 24 games played with a 10-14-0 record with 20 points. Now, of course, the biggest surprise is obviously the Columbus Blue Jackets, a team that I say would be top three of the division, because on paper they have a really good team. Obviously, starting the season with like an 0-9, and then firing the coach, bringing in John Tortorella, they've obviously have started turning things around under Tortorella. It's just, will they be able to make up for their earlier failures in the season and be able to compete for a playoff spot later down the road? Normally, in the beginning of the season, that's when you want to be winning games. That's when you want to be getting those points, because later down the road, those points that you lose out on in the beginning come back to haunt you.
Pittsburgh is a surprise to me being in third place because honestly, they really aren't scoring a lot. The only reason that they're probably in the position they're in is honestly Marc-Andre Fleury. Crosby has not been having a good season. Malkin's not been having a good season. We've been hearing reports about how there's frustration in that locker room. So it will be interesting to see Pittsburgh in the long run. Do they stay in third place or do they start slipping down into the rating in the ranks of the division in the league? So that's another one we have to wait and see. Obviously, Carolina is in a rebuild, so we're getting what we're expecting from Carolina. Obviously, question marks will come closer to the trade deadline of what they'll do with Eric Staal and Cam Ward, who are both in the last year of their contracts. Philadelphia, another team that's currently in the rebuild process, in my personal opinion. New Jersey, I don't even know how New Jersey is in fifth. I really don't. They have a minor league defense. They don't have a great offense. It's just the fact that they're 11-9-2 is kind of surprising in my opinion. I would think that the Islanders would have been a little bit higher up. I think they would have been higher than Pittsburgh would be right now. But, you know, overall, you're kind of seeing what it kind of should be right now, with the exception of the Columbus Blue Jackets, who I believe should be in the top three. And then going into the Western Conference, you have the Central Division, where in first place is the Dallas Stars with 23 games played, with 18 wins, 5 losses, and no overtime losses for 36 points. They're first in the West and second in the league. Second is the St. Louis Blues with 23 games played, 14-6-3 record, 31 points for them. Then Nashville's in third with 22 games played, 12-6-4 record at 28 points. Fourth is Chicago Blackhawks with 23 games played with a 13-8-2 record for 28 points. Minnesota's in fifth with a 21 games played with an 11-7-3 record at 25 points. Sixth is the Winnipeg Jets with a 24 games played, 11-11-2 record with 24 points. And the Colorado Avalanche with 22 games played in an 8-13-1 record with 17 points. You expected Dallas, St. Louis, Nashville, and Chicago to be where they are right now. Honestly, I feel a little disappointment with the Winnipeg Jets. I thought that they would be a little bit higher up in the standings for the division. After the way they played last season, you would think so. But I think Winnipeg has a chance to really turn things around. Obviously, Colorado is not doing well. You would think they would. After having that drop-off last season, they would use it as a way to dip back up. But obviously, they're not having that same success that they would hope to have from a season ago. Chicago's in it. Nashville's in it. St. Louis is in it. Dallas is in it. These are all teams that are really in it. And Dallas is obviously one of the bigger surprises, being 18-5-0 with 36 points, first in the West, first in the division, second in the league, only to Montreal. So very good division right here. I mean, if you look at the points, 36, 31, 28, 28, 25, 24, you know, we're not going to include Colorado because they're at 17. Those six of those teams, man, they're all in it. They're all in it. And then going into it, we're going to talk about the Pacific Division, where you have the Los Angeles Kings in first. After playing 22 games, they're 13-8-1 with 27 points. The San Jose Sharks were second with 22 games played with 13-9-0 record for 26 points. And the Arizona Coyotes are third for 22 games played with a 12-9-1 record for 25 points. Vancouver is in Canucks are in fourth with 24 games played with a 9-8-7 record at 25 points. The Anaheim Ducks are fifth with 24 games played with 8-11-5 record at 21 points. Calgary's in sixth with 23 games played with an 8-13-2 record at 18 points. And the Edmonton Oilers are seventh with 23 games played with 7-14-2 record and 16 points. Now, when you look at the Pacific Division, LA and San Jose are right where they are in the top three. Arizona is a very pleasant surprise with where they're at right now. Vancouver, you would think, would be doing a bit better, but also with some of the moves they made in the offseason, they look like they are a rebuilding team as well. The Anaheim Ducks is the true disappointment right now. This is a team that has so much talent, and they did the moves to really bolster them to try to win the Cup this year. Being in fifth isn't good enough for this team. Having an 8-11-5 record in the quarter mark is not where you want to be if you're a team that's been predicted to win the Stanley Cup by all the hockey insiders.
Sixth place is the Calgary Flames, which is another, this is a team that's probably come back to earth after having a very, very good season last season. Only time will tell if they're able to pick things up and start turning things around for them and maybe try to make a push for the playoffs. Because you don't know how much longer Arizona is going to be holding it, where they have a great rookie duo in Anthony Duclair and Max Domi, who are leading the way for that team right now. And then you have the Edmonton Oilers, who right now are missing Connor McDavid. They were playing a lot better with Connor McDavid. He was definitely a catalyst for that offense, and him being out injured right now is affecting the team, and it is showing right now. So maybe when we see Connor McDavid back, we will see the Edmonton Oilers making a better impact, but honestly, I think they're probably still going to be near the bottom of the pack, even at the end of the season. And now with that said, I just want to say thank you for listening to the Experience Hockey Talk. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Experience Hockey, Facebook, facebook.com, Experience Hockey Talk. You can follow me on Twitter at TheLindenBaum75, which is where I normally post the Experience the Convention-based podcast. And also go to facebook.com/x75productions, which is where I normally post the Experience the Convention-based podcast. With that also said, as everyone knows, DerbyCon has been the sponsor of the NWHL Report. This upcoming weekend is DerbyCon. I will be at DerbyCon this weekend, so that means, once again, the Experience Hockey Talk will be delayed until about Monday. Also, when I do the Experience Hockey Talk for this upcoming weekend, yes, the NWHL Report will still be sponsored by DerbyCon, but we'll also be announcing that new sponsor for the NWHL Report. And ladies and gentlemen, once again, this has been the Experience Hockey Talk, Serious Hockey Talk for the Serious Hockey fans. I'm Michael Lindenbaum, and we are brought to you by the Tilt a Kilt Frederick, the Tilt a Kilt Pub and Eatery, located at 5605 Spectrum Drive in Frederick, Maryland. Come to the Celtic-themed sports pub featuring the world-famous Tilt a Kilt Girls. For more information on the Tilt a Kilt Frederick, visit them on Facebook today. And like we did with last week's episode, we are going to end with a special message from Zachary McGinnis from Galactic Productions.
Hey everyone, Mike here, and I'm with Zachary from Galactic Productions, and we're here to talk to you about Rangers for Relief. Zachary, why don't you tell everyone about Rangers for Relief?
So Rangers for Relief is a nonprofit organization. Myself, Austin St. John, David Yost, Walter Jones, David Fielding, Karen Ashley, and several other Power Rangers cast members came up with last week at Ranger Stop in Orlando, Florida. It just happened to be the same time as the Paris terror attacks. And we all were, you know, wondering what we can do to help those guys, the victims at from Paris. So we formed Rangers for Relief. At Ranger Stop, we've raised over $3,000. We're currently still taking donations through November 30th. And for every donation of $20 or more, you get a ticket. Every $10 after that, you get another ticket. And on the 30th at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time, we will raffle off one photo signed by all 26 Power Rangers cast members that attended Ranger Stop.
Thank you, Zachary, for that. And we wish you the best of luck with the Rangers for Relief Fund.